I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, are you mother...
Politics, politics, humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Arch Pop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hi, my name is Bart. Welcome to show 56 of Bart Cop Radio. Good to see you. Well, we got another one of those Who Knows shows for you today. Basically, all we can do is kind of hang on for the ride because we don't know what's going on. As the years go by, we might get a clue, but so far, we got no clue. Also, playing hurt again today. Might even make for a fun medical story. Don't get many of those here. Let me see if I can make this a fun medical story. Back in August, the good Dr. Turkeywaddle saw fit to run through my knee with a bunch of giant steel spikes with holes in the end of them. Some call them needles. And they put a bunch of turkey waddle in my knee, which made it a whole lot better. Go figure. Oh, by the way, this is only for Oklahomans. If you're from any other state, they use science and technology on you. In Oklahoma, they use turkey waddle. But anyway, he told me in 6 weeks, your turkey waddle should be at its peak. So we'll have you back in for your final evaluation. Now, I smelled a hand job, but you know, what the hell? He's a surgeon. What are we going to explain to him how things work? So, all right, we played his game, so... 6 weeks later, September 1st, I go back in for my final analysis. So I get up there, and I sign in, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and then finally the nurse comes and asks for old Bart. So here I am slogging back to the little waiting room in the back. I get in there, and there's another half hour. Finally, some lady comes in. You know, they never introduce themselves. They never walk in and say, hi, I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor, I'm a girl walking by. I'm a secretary, I'm a helper, I'm an assistant, I'm an intern, you know, nothing. They just walk in and start asking questions. Lady walks in, are you ready for your shots? And I said, ha, ha, ha. You ain't getting away with that. So then she says, no, seriously, how's your knee? And I said, knee's just fine. Well, I'm such an idiot. She says, do you want to hang around and tell that to the doctor? And I'm so stupid, so stupid. Think of Chris Farley. I say, yeah. Like an idiot. What kind of brain do I have? So I wait another half hour. Finally, the doctor sticks his head in and says, how's the knee? And I said, it's just fine. I'm real surprised it worked that well. And he said, good to hear that. And he shook my hand and left. So what the hell am I doing? I'm up to the doctor's office an hour and a half to tell the guy, my knee's fine. Thanks. Oh, and then he hands me the two pieces of paper, which means be sure and check with the girl on the way out. So that's another $30. It's like, hello, why did I come here today? I could have phoned you and said my knee feels fine, but no, you insisted I drop by. And then it dawned on me. Organized medicine is a lot like organized religion. In organized religion, they can't make any money if you sit at home and pray to your Lord, your God, in the privacy of your own home, by yourself, just you and God. They can't get a piece of that pie. They can't make any money if you sit in your house and pray to God. So they build churches. And then they put the big guilt thing on you. You haven't been to church. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll go tomorrow. And then, of course, once you get to church, they stick that little basket in front of you, and you're like, oh, I need to fork over some dough? It's what, 10%? Isn't that what the mob charges? Isn't that what Don Corleone charges? When you got a little shop and, you know, Silvio or somebody comes by and picks up the 10% every week to protect you? Is that what we're paying God for, protection? So anyway, just like the church, they can't make any money if you're sitting at the house. The doctor can't make any money if I phone in, my knee feels great. So they have me come by. Now, it's only across town, and it's only a half-hour wait to get into the room, and then a half-hour wait for the lady... the unknown female, to come by and ask me how my knee's doing. Then another half hour, because I don't have the effing brains, to say, no, I don't need to hang around and talk to the doctor. If that's all you're going to do is say, how's your knee? And I say, fine, but no, I'm an idiot. I'm so stupid. So I wait another half hour. Doctor says, you're fine. go pay the lady your $30, you know? And it's the kind of thing in my younger days I would have put up a protest, but, you know, what are you going to do? She probably would have said, oh, if you'd like to protest the $30, have a seat and the doctor be right with you. And I wait another half an hour. And I just don't have that many half hours to put into a losing cause. Oh, forgot the point of the whole deal. So the doctor tells me in mid-August, around September 1st, your knee is going to be at its prime. That's going to be where the turkey waddle takes full total effect. That's why I want you to come back and talk to me then. So I come back, talk to him then. This was on a Friday. Now on Thursday, the government put out a big thing. No, the government didn't do it. Merck put out a report saying, if you're on Vioxx, get the hell off of it. Get the hell off of it right now because it's killing people left and right. They're dropping dead. If you're on Vioxx, get the hell off of it. And when I went on the Vioxx, remember I went on the Vioxx? If you're new, you won't remember. I had the tennis elbow because I worked so hard for you, the reader. Anyway, so I get this tennis elbow from typing 12 hours a day. And it's not funny. I hear you laughing. It's not funny, the tennis elbow. That hurts like a mother. It gets to where, you know, that one day I reached for my keyboard, my arm fell off. That's when I knew there was trouble. But anyway, so I'm on the Vioxx. And when they put me on the Vioxx, I said, can I keep taking this Vioxx? Because it works real good. You know, I'd hate to find out you eat it for a month or a year, and then they say, oh, no, you know, like birth control. Not that I've ever been on it. But I don't want to find out later that there's some bad news. They say, oh, no, Vioxx is just about the most safest thing in the world. I'm thinking kickback from Merck. So I'm on the Vioxx, and then here's what happened. Vioxx, or somebody, seems like Merck put on their website that we're not real happy with our Vioxx because we think it's killing people. And they went to the government and they said, we're thinking maybe we ought to pull this off. And the government said, no, it's not a problem. Which makes me think Smirk's getting a kickback from Merck. But he's getting a really big one. The doctor's getting only $1,000 a month or something. But, you know, Smirk's getting $1 million a month. Promise. Anyway, the government said, no, it's fine. Keep it on the market. It's fine. No. You just sell that Vioxx as much and as long as you want. And Merck, I refuse to believe they're a company with a conscience, so they must have sensed liability trouble down the road a little bit. So they said, nope, we're going to take this off the shelves ourselves. We're going to issue our own nationwide, worldwide call. We're going to recall this stuff. We're going to pull it off the market. Fine. This was on August 30th. So I go to the doctor September 1st, and I tell him my knee feels just fine. So I get home, wake up Saturday morning, my knee hurts. Don't it figure? Just like when you buy a car or a water heater or any damn thing in the world, you know how they warranty it for 90 days and that 91st day it turns to shit. Just that's what happened to my knee. He tells me 6 weeks, you're perfect. 6 weeks and one day my knee starts hurting, but I use my head. Now see, you have to use your head because the doctors, they don't care. You have to use your own head to protect your own ass. They're busy. They got stuff to do. They got other stuff on their mind. And you know, it makes you wonder, that $30 they jipped out of me, I see two possibilities. The doctor has so much pressure on him because of, you know, his student loans. This doctor is probably 45. He probably has his student loans paid for by now. But, you know, you doctors, you got your student loans. You got your this and that. You got your malpractice. You got your office expense. You got your taxes. You got your employee expense. You got all that withholding and all that other. You know, I know doctors have expenses, so it makes me wonder, did the doctor need that extra $30 to get over the hump this month? Is that why he stole that from me? Or is the doctor a Republican and he wanted that extra $30? Make me drive across town, wait an hour and a half to tell him my knee's fine, pay the woman. So anyway, Vioxx comes off the shelf on Thursday the 30th. I go to the doctor Friday the 1st. I say my knee just fine. I've just started doing backflips and shit to show him. And I wake up Saturday morning, my knee hurts. And so I'm thinking, hey, must be the Vioxx. Maybe the Vioxx was masking my knee problems. So I call the doctor and say, can I get some Vioxx replacement? And they said, well, sure. Don't you hate it when the doctor acts like no problem? So they set me up with this Mobid, I think it's called, M-O-B-I-D. Who the hell ever heard of Mobid? And what will they, what are the side effects from Mobid? What's it going to do to me? I'm going to have a giant arm growing out of my head pretty soon. Anyway, long story short, wasn't too damn short. Playing with pain today. We're going to try to make it a good show, though. Let's see, how do we do? That's been so long, I forgot how to. Oh, yeah. Shot of Chinako starts off the show traditionally. Oh, that's good stuff. I can taste the apple. and the Wildflowers. Oh, boy, that's good stuff. Okay, big show. Here we go. Show 56. Boom.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and running, running,
and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and
in this context, there's no disrespect. So when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect from all intellect and let the rhythm affect. Or inhibition, follow your intuition, free your inner soul and break away from tradition. Cause when we be out, girl, it's pulling me out. You wouldn't believe how we wow shit out. Turn it till it's burned out, turn it till it's turned out. Act up from Northwest East Side.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned,
come on,
get started,
come on,
get started,
get started.
Let's get it started.
Ha,
let's get it started in here. Let's get it started.
Pat Buchanan.
John Kerry came in to debate. He was poised. He was authoritative. He was controlled. He put on the best debate performance of his life. And the president came in to respond to him with the anti-Kerry sound bites, which have caused Republican rallies to cheer. But the president could not get any response from Jim Lehrer or the audience to these sound bites that he was delivering out there. So as a result, when the cutaways to the president went on, he looked peeved. He looked miffed. He looked petulant even, and so John Kerry won this debate going away. And what John Kerry did was diminish to a good degree the image of him as a flip-flopper and all the rest of it, because he didn't look like that.
Did you notice the extended reference to George Herbert Walker Bush's book dealing with not going into Baghdad and the quoting of that? You think that got under the sun's skin and it rattled him?
The whole debate process got under the president's skin in the first round. It didn't take Kerry, it wasn't a matter of Kerry's skill. This president didn't want to be there. He was communicating that very clearly. He was also in over his head. This is the problem that the Republicans have constructed by having this vacuum in which the Republican campaign's taken place. The self-delusional quality of the Madison Square Garden rally convention, where no contrary thought was ever allowed. And then these crazy Bush public events that the public has to have a ticket to go to.
You mean they protected him too?
They seal him off from all reality. And Jim Lehrer was bringing to him a reality that he had not been confronted with since the Iraq War started, and he cannot handle it. He is in way over his head.
Bush has not been subjected to tough interrogation by the press, which is not going to cheer him. He's not been subjected to debates. He's got a staff which, in effect, does not contradict him, in my judgment. I think he went out there and felt that, as Eleanor says, he's a conviction and belief politician. He is not a man who's a reflective and deals in a debate type of discussion. He is no good at that. And Kerry was very polished and effective at that. And the president was like a fish out of water.
Okay. 90 minutes is too long for President Bush. He's got enough material for maybe 30 minutes.
You mean
he
there was
kept repeating himself. And it was like a campaign. It was all his slogans from his
You
campaign.
Mean it's hard work, it's hard work, it's hard work?
And Kerry came in there. I mean, he looked like $1 million.
He was a little nervous, though, in the beginning.
Well, you always are at the beginning, but he was very polished. He was in control of himself every single second. He knew when the camera was on him. He would not
handle
it perfectly.
No president through all of American history has ever ceded, and nor would I, the right to preempt in any way necessary to protect the United States of America. But if and when you do it, Jim, you've got to do it in a way that passes the test, that passes the global test, where your countrymen, your people, understand fully why you're doing what you're doing, and you can prove to the world that you did it for legitimate reasons.
I'm not exactly sure what you mean, passes the global test. You take preemptive action if you pass a global test?
Global test. This language was immediately seized on by President Bush, as you saw. And later that night, by Vice President Cheney, who continued the global test attack in Colorado.
The wannabe senator who says he would support it as long as it passed some kind of global test.
Question. Is this a cheap trick by Bush and Cheney? or is it a true reading of Kerry's two sentences on the subject of preemptive strikes? Lawrence O'Donnell.
It's a cheap trick. What Kerry is obviously saying is there's no specific test involved here. It's just that you have to have the sense that if you're doing a preemptive strike, that your country is with you, which is where he began, and that the world will understand it. That's the test. Will the world understand it? Not necessarily get the world to approve it, not even a majority of the world, but will he be able to communicate to the world why he's done it? Now, it didn't surprise me when President Bush said, "I don't think I understand what you mean by a global test." I'm not sure the president understood anything. When you get to a debate where the president gets to a spot where he's literally run out of material and doesn't know what to do with a full two-minute slot, it's very clear who won the debate. I said here last week, John Kerry was going to win this debate, was going to beat him badly, and he did.
You're right. Lawrence is right. Snyder joins us with more on that. Bill, do you want to start with facts or polls?
Well, let's take a look at the facts. Let's go to Senator Kerry. He criticized the administration's troop commitment to Iraq rather than Afghanistan by making this statement about Osama bin Laden's whereabouts.
The president moved the troops, so he's got 10 times the number of troops in Iraq than he has in Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden is.
Well, American intelligence believes that Osama bin Laden is not in Afghanistan. He and other top leaders of al-Qaeda are believed to be in Pakistan, where the United States doesn't operate.
Schneider, I can't tell if you're doing this out of stupidity or out of being a whore. And yes, Kerry did misspeak. When he was talking about how many troops we had in Iraq versus Afghanistan, he was talking about when bin Laden was in Afghanistan. The whole point is we had him cornered in Bora Bora. And just as we were moving in, Bush said, well, no, let's let these other guys do it, and we'll call a truce so the Pakistan planes can come in and pick up Osama and his friends and fly them out of there, and then we can attack. No sense keeping a bunch of troops in a country where Osama has already escaped from. That's what Kerry was talking about.
Kerry also said General Shinseki was forced to retire as a result of his criticism of troop levels in Iraq, but his retirement was announced in April of 2002, and he made the statement his criticism of troop levels in 2003.
Again, we don't know if Schneider is just playing the whore or if he's just that stupid. I know the answer to this question, and if I know the answer, why doesn't Bill Schneider, multi-million-dollar paid professional whore for CNN, why doesn't he know the answer? And here is the answer. Shinseki was supposed to be retired the next year, but Rumsfeld announced his replacement a year ahead of time. When you do that, that makes him a lame duck. That retires him in effect. It's like Jay Leno right now. Jay Leno's got very, very little pull because he's already been put out to pasture. If you're going to list the top powerful people in Hollywood, I doubt Jay now is in the top 100. He might have been in the top 20 a month ago, but right now he's not in the top 100 because he's been retired. That's what they did to Shinseki. If I know that, why doesn't Snyder know it? You whore!
And finally, Kerry said that the United States is paying 90% of the cost in Iraq, $200 billion. Well, that does overestimate the cost, at least for now. The Office of Management and Budget said it has cost $120 billion this year, not $200 billion. And the Congressional Budget Office estimates the cost would hit $230 billion, but over the next 10 years. Aaron?
Over the next 10 years, and we're at what number now?
$120 billion, according to the Office of Management and Budget, not $200 billion.
And it's going to take another 10 years to get to $200 billion?
That's what the Office of Management and the Congressional Budget Office estimates.
Okay. They probably have better calculators than I have common sense, but I'm going to go back and look at those numbers just in case.
Well, holy moly, look what we have here. I am forced to say something nice about Aaron Brown. I'm not sure when the last time some anchor on CNN actually used his damn head live on the air. This may be a first. I can't remember when the last time an anchor on CNN used his damn head and actually had a coherent thought. Snyder just got done saying Kerry was lying about the numbers because we've spent $120 billion this year, and the CBO or whoever said it was going to cost $230 over the next 10 years, which is obviously horseshit. If you're spending $120 now to hit $230 in 10 years, that means we're going to drop down $9 or $10 billion a year. Now, how are we going to spend $120 this year and $10 next year and $10 next year? Remember that. It's $120 billion in 2004 and $10 for 2005, $10 for 2006? I don't think so. How in the world are costs going to drop by 90% come January? That is stupid. That's ridiculous. Schneider should know that, and he acted like, oh, don't blame me for the numbers. I'm going to point to the guy behind me. Well, no, asshole, you're the one that ran in front of the camera with your hair on fire screaming, I caught him lying, I caught him lying. Turns out you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And Koresh forbid, I got to say something nice about Aaron Brown because he called you on it. If it costs $120 this year, how is it going to cost $10 next year? It doesn't work that way, Schneider. The world doesn't spin that way. You ought to know that. You're a whore. Now quit lying and get out of here. Let's talk a minute about Rudy. Now, Rudy has that strange history. Don't know much about early Rudy, but Rudy became mayor of New York, and he turned into this Nazi pig who thought it was cute to, you know, like when it was roundup time, it would cost money to round up the homeless. So what he would do is wait until it was below zero, and then he'd have his goons raid the shelters. I mean, it just seems a little inhuman to attack a guy when he's having to go to a certain place because it's zero outside and he's homeless and he's penniless and he has no shoes and he has no coat. So let's attack the guy then. Rudy turned into what everybody considered a Nazi. And our old friend, Dennis Miller, this is why he said he abandoned everything he'd ever believed in as a liberal all his life because he heard someone call Rudy a Nazi. Well, Dennis, great thinking, dude. So if someone calls Kerry a Nazi, now you're coming back? Well, guess what? We don't want you. Stay over there. But anyway, Rudy went from being this Nazi ogre, and then on 9/11, when the president couldn't be found, when the president was peeing his pants faster than they could change them for him, somebody had to step up and calm the nation, and that turned out to be Rudy. Remember the old Star Trek analogy that it's the evil in you that allows you to lead? Well, evil Nazi Rudy stood up. He stood tall right there. You want me, you come get me. He stood there and said, we're going to get through this. America is safe. We're strong. It's going to work. Don't worry. This is a temporary thing. We're going to get past it. And the whole, they call him America's mayor now. Yeah. It's real cute. But the idea that when America needed somebody, Rudy stood up and Rudy was there. And no matter how much you hate him, what he did on 9/11, you got to give him cred for that. You got to give him points, no matter what. Even if he's a minus 10, you got to give him 5, brings him up to a minus 5. But what Rudy did for us on 9/11 won't be forgotten, especially because when you contrast it to the wet pants usurper who stole the job, and then when the job got tough, he ran like a little rabbit. So Rudy turned into the big hero, and now that he had just all this goodwill stored up, a little bit like what Bush did with America's goodwill. When Rudy had all this goodwill stored up, he decides now that he's presidential material. Someone told Rudy and McCain that they were going to be the ticket in 2008. So the two of them sold their souls to the Republican Party, hook, line, and sinker. I'm surprised for both of them, but when a man gets a hard-on for some power, it's really hard to persuade him otherwise. So we've got Rudy explaining to us what a smart and wise man and calm and resolute and brave and heroic and smart again, because Bush is so smart and he's so full of resolve and he's going to get the, you know, Rudy just yakety, yakety, yakety going on and about the greatness of George Bush. Tom Brokaw's going to do a little interview with Rudy and listen to Rudy wind his watch right on the TV.
What was the president's best moment here tonight?
I think the president's best moment was making clear his firm resolve to win the war on terror and to complete what we're involved in Iraq, something that really was forced on us.
Now, see, Rudy, you got all this goodwill built up, and then you just stand there and effing lie to us. Talk about how we had to retaliate against Iraq. Iraq didn't attack anybody. You just lied. You remember your counterpart, that idiot Pataki? He said he wanted to take one of the Saddam statues and melt it down and put it in part of the new World Trade Center, as though Saddam sent those planes? What is wrong with the Republican Party that they so obviously and clearly try to sell the big lie when everybody knows? Years before that monkey 9/11 commission came back and said Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, everybody knew that. Well, at least everybody reads BartCop.com, and I think the smart people, too. You combine those two. I heard today Al Franken said still 30% of America thinks Saddam hit the World Trade Centers. And that's a bullshit idea that Bush wants you to have. The stupider you are, the easier Bush can lie to you, the better they like it. And I don't know why Republicans stand for that. If Bill Clinton stood there day after day after day and told lie after lie, and everybody knew it was a lie, and he kept telling the lie, and 30% of America believed the lie, and someone cornered me and said, Bart, how can you stand that? I would have to say, I can't stand that. Bill Clinton's a liar. I can't back the guy anymore. He's making gain out of lying to the stupid. I couldn't support a man that could do that. But the Republicans have no problem. I guess part of it is the tax cut, and part of it is Bush's stance on the Negroes. They like the way he disses the Negroes.
And also to give hope to our American troops that are there. It really is a horrible message that John Kerry sends, that this is the wrong war in the wrong place and the wrong time to men and women, you know, who are fighting this war, losing their lives.
Lately, I've come to the conclusion that is a really, really sad and wrong thing to lie to yourself. In politics, people want to be lied to. They just love to be lied to. They don't want to hear the truth. They want to be lied to. But does the soldier in the field want to be lied to? I can't think that he does. Apparently, Rudy thinks lying to the troops is the best way to go about this. It's hard to believe. Unlike Rudy, John Kerry has been in the field, he's been shot, he's been wounded, he's been 11,000 miles from home, wondering what the hell am I doing here, and it just makes me think the soldiers deserve better than to get a big-ass lie from back home from George W. Bush.
We are there for a purpose, and John Kerry totally negates that purpose, and I think destroys their morale.
You know, I'm thinking the soldiers are probably smarter than that. When they arrived in Baghdad, I'll bet they wondered why their number one priority was to protect the oil fields and let everything else go. Let all the government records go that might tell you where the WMD are, might tell you where the soldiers and the weapons are. No need to protect the museums and the infrastructure of the country. No reason to protect any of that, but protect that oil, number one. The soldiers had to think, why are we here to protect the oil? Why is that number one?
We're trying to bring freedom. We're trying to bring accountable government. We're trying to bring a decent government to a part of the world that doesn't know that. That will make the world more peaceful. It will save lives in the future.
Rudy, there you go again with another bald-faced lie. We did not invade Iraq so we could bring them freedom. We invaded Iraq to protect ourselves from the imminent launch. And now listen to this Rudy son of a bitch explaining that the reason we went to Baghdad was to give those people a better life. Rudy, that's a lie.
Last week I interviewed President Musharraf of Pakistan. He says that the United States war in Iraq has made the situation for the United States in the Islamic world worse, not better. It removed Saddam Hussein, but that was a greater benefit to the people of Iraq than it was to the rest of the world.
Tom, you can't tell me that it's made it worse. I mean,
This is what President Musharraf is saying, and he's from Pakistan, and he's our ally.
But he wasn't in New York, and he wasn't in Washington, and he wasn't in Pennsylvania when they attacked us.
How can any self-respecting Republican sit there and listen to this bullshit rationale for why we went to war? Rudy's talking about the World Trade Centers, the Pentagon, and that field in Pennsylvania, so we had to go to Iraq? You know, they are very lucky that there is not a Republican on the entire internet that would dare debate me. I would chop them up and make them cry. It would be so obvious. The first monkey that gets in a chat room with me and says, of course Saddam hit 9/11. I'm going to spank him till the cows come home. I'm going to put that big boot right in his ass. He's going to have nowhere to go because the facts are all on my side. You can't steal the facts from me. You just can't. They're mine. You wish you had them, but you don't. Every time you try to sell the lie that Iraq hit the United States, you are just a monkey in a man suit, and I'm going to make you eat it, and I hope there's a lot of witnesses there. I am invulnerable in an argument on this point. Can't nobody touch me, and that's why nobody will get in the ring with me. Think what it would be like to be a liberal and have the conservatives say, oh, you don't dare meet me in a chat room because once we face off and we put my facts against yours, I'm so clear-cut the winner, you'll just have to hang your head in shame and go away, Bart Cop. I'll put my boot in your ass, Bart Cop, and make you go home crying, oh, no, please don't do that to me. That ain't never going to happen because we got the facts on our side. We're telling the truth. And if I'm wrong, where's the monkey to stand up? Why can't anybody? In February, we're going to hit, I think, either we're going to start our 10th year or we will have completed 10 years. And I can't find a monkey to debate. 10 years on the fucking internet. There must be 300-400 people on the internet, and not one of them will step up and do a little battle, though, Bart, because I got the facts on my side. They know that. That's why they're afraid. If they sincerely thought they were right, they would get in the ring with me, they would lose, and then they would sit there and think, how did that happen? But their refusal to get in the ring proves they know they're wrong ahead of time. Just like Rudy sitting there lying to Tom Brokaw. He knows Iraq didn't hit us, but he's got his little pretend goggles on. He's trying to sell a piece of shit to the American people, and he painted Gucci on it. And he's trying to tell us that that's a Gucci whatever, but no, it's a piece of shit, and everybody knows it. Rudy knows it, too. Rudy, you're going to hell. I'm a Catholic. I know how that works. When you get on there and intentionally lie, oh, think how television increases the sin. It's one thing to tell a lie, but you get on television with millions and millions of people believing, and you lie to millions of people? When I was a Catholic, they had this little point system where if you do a bad thing, it was worth 500 negative points or whatever, and you had to say two Hail Marys to make up for the 500 Hail Marys worth 250 points apiece. So you say two Hail Marys, and that cancels out that lie you told to Aunt Sally, you know. But when you get on TV and you lie to 20 million people, Rudy, you got to do 40 million Hail Marys to break even, Rudy. You're going to hell, Rudy. You understand what I'm saying? You can't be a Catholic and lie your ass off and expect to get to heaven. How dare you mock your God that way? You don't believe in God any more than you believe in George W. Bush. You're just a liar, Rudy. You take your whore to church with you, Rudy. That's how much you respect your God and your church. Rudy, you're not even half a man.
And we didn't provoke that. We didn't cause that.
No, I understand that. But what he is saying is that the war in Iraq now is making it worse for the United States in that part of the world. It's made us a larger target, not a smaller.
Well, at least it's making it worse for the United States in that part of the world, but not worse for the United States.
No, I'm not saying about here, but he's saying there.
That's the whole purpose of it. The whole purpose of it is to go on offense against terrorism. I thought the president was very articulate and very clear.
So Rudy goes to the next fabricated reason why we had to invade Iraq, so we could fight them over there instead of fighting them here. What is wrong with these Republicans that they can't look at their 18-month history? They're changing the history of 2003, and it's only 2004. They're telling us what happened last year did not happen. They're telling us that George Bush stood there in March of 2003 and said, we've got to invade Iraq because they're coming here. But if we go there first, we can prevent that. That never happened. He never said that. The whole reason we invaded was to stop them from launching. Blair said 45 minutes they can launch. They're going to be here inside the hour if Congress doesn't act. That's why the Senate and the House signed those resolutions or okayed the resolutions, because Bush said, here they fucking come. He's got nuclear bombs. He's got weapons of mass destruction. He's got mustard gas. He's got all these biological toxins, botulism shit, and he's coming. He's loading these little drones with them. They're going up and down the East Coast. They're going to kill tens of millions of people if we don't do something right now. And a year and a half later, Rudy's saying, well, We could fight them there, we could fight them here. That's why we went over there. No, Rudy, you keep making shit up. And those 1,060 men who died for your lies, how do you go to bed at night, Rudy? Do you count soldiers' caskets when you try to get to sleep, Rudy? You should. The wasted lives that is partly on you, Rudy, sitting there selling this lie to the American people. You know it's a lie, and you're selling it to put money and power in your pocket. You are the worst kind of whore. You're letting men die so you can get ahead. You're stepping on bodies. No, they were alive. You're turning live men into bodies as you step your way up the ladder for the Republicans, Rudy. How the fuck do you live with yourself, Rudy? How do you do that? And still have a conscience? Do you have a soul, Rudy? Do you have one at all?
Stark difference between him and John Kerry. The president believes we have to be not just on defense against terrorism, we have to be on offense, and that Iraq includes part of that. I also heard from John Kerry a remarkable contradiction. Here's a man that has to try to straighten out and make his position cohesive, and he in one breath he says that Saddam Hussein really wasn't a threat, that the president miscalculated and was wrong, and at the end of the debate he said that Saddam Hussein was a threat. Well, he either was or he wasn't a threat.
Thank you very much, Mayor Rudy Giuliani, for being with us tonight. You'll be out of the campaign trail.